Hi, everybody. I'm Beatty Cohn-Vedos, and these days we all need help in getting our feet on the ground. And one of the primary reasons why I actually chose the Beatles song Help as my theme song for the Ask Beatty Show is that I am hoping that you will all give yourselves permission to reach out and ask that's rough. And these days, the reality is that the majority of people, my patients, my friends, my colleagues, my family, people are really, really going through an understandably so tough time, triggered, not caused, but triggered by the coronavirus. I mean, people are so concerned. And again, for all the right reasons, am I going to be able to pay my rent? Am I going to be able to bring food to the family? What about my job? More and more and more people are involuntarily having to retire and give up their jobs. And of course, the continued worry about the virus. And we hear contradictory things every single day in terms of really what we should do. Of course, we all know about the 6-foot social distance and, of course, the importance of wearing masks. Yesterday in the New York Times, there were contradictions at the CDC about how the virus is contracted. And these days, it seems as if we're finding that it is contracted in the air, so that there is a lot of confusion. And for parents who have children who are of school age, the real question and the real concern, do I send my children to school? Is half day safe? Should they be at school at all? What is the impact going to be of just homeschooling? And when you think about homeschooling, that's all fine and dandy for parents, for people who aren't working, but the majority of people do work. And what are they supposed to do? They can't stay home with their children, and yet you do not want to put your children and you do not want to put yourself at risk. So it is a very, very, very difficult and challenging time for all of us. And again, people are still very concerned about whether or not there is going to be an uptick in the virus, as is predicted by so many scientists. And of course, these are the people who we should be listening to, not Donald Trump and not consumers and not newscasters, but the real scientists. And we were promised a stimulus package, a second stimulus package. And so many people were waiting. They were needing it, not to go out and buy clothes or to buy cars, but to be able to actually meet their expenses for rent, for food. And that too is really up in the air. Unemployment insurance, again, there was a promise of $600 a week. Well, now we're back to $300 a week. And I know that in New York State, my understanding as of this weekend is that $300 a week promised unemployment insurance has still not come through. So it's one thing for all of us to talk about reflection. And of course, it is important to reflect on our lives and our relationships and to reevaluate where we are and where we've been. And much more importantly, where we really want to go and how we are going to get there, and talking about resetting. And yet, day-to-day life for so many people is still extraordinarily stressful. And I haven't yet even mentioned about what is going on politically. And hopefully the election is going to bring about good news, at least for those of us who are progressive, and that we will see a turn, a positive turn in the economy, in our political system, and of course, in what is going on in the world of mental health. You know, I read every day that the self-help lines, the hotlines are surging. And I see that. I see that as a positive, positive thing that people are giving themselves permission to reach out and ask for help. And that they're starting to see it as really a strength and not a weakness. And of course, what I've found over the past 35 years as a practicing psychotherapist and sex therapist is that people typically, they only really call me when there is a crisis. And typically people do wait too long to ask for help. And we're also seeing a real increase in alcohol use. Apparently, it has jumped 75%. Wine usage is also up to 66%. And now that it's getting a little colder out there, I think we're going to see a turn where people are going to be exercising less and eating more, which is why it is so important. And this is, of course, what I talk to my patients about all the time, is that we are very, very mindful every single day of trying to do what is really in our best interest in terms of the kinds of foods we're eating. A reminder, of course, about the importance of plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and fish and nuts, and making sure, even though it's been so hard to interact face-to-face with people, to interact and socialize. I mean, now we have Zoom and we have Skype, so that the more interaction and the more socialization that we have, the better we are going to feel. And again, I can't stress the importance of exercise and weight training. And if your thing is yoga and meditation, and just taking a bath and slowing down and making sure that you have really supportive people in your life. And of course, people who've been listening to the Ask Beauty Show, now today is the 314th Ask Beauty Show that I have been hosting here on the Progressive Radio Network. So you hear me talk a lot about eliminating toxins. Dr. Gary Null, of course, he talks primarily about eliminating chemical toxins. Well, I talk about eliminating chemical toxins, but I also talk a lot about eliminating as best as possible toxic people. And that means friends and family who can make us crazy if we allow them to. So again, there are a lot of things that we can do, and it is important to be very, very mindful as we navigate our days that we are really doing things that are indeed in our best interest. You know, it's interesting. There was a piece in the business section of the New York Times a couple of days ago, and the heading was "Pitching Serenity in Age of Stress." Of course, I was really, really curious to see what this article was all about. So they said, of course, that a lethal pandemic and widespread unemployment have coincided with a tense presidential campaign and nationwide unrest. Well, we are well aware of that. However, for the advertising industry, that means a lot of opportunity. So listen to what some of the advertisers are pitching in terms of trying to pitch serenity in an age of stress. Quote, "If history has taught us anything, it's that we can get through anything, and that beer sometimes help." That is the Actor Paul Giamatti, we all know Paul Giamatti, says in a Coors Light commercial. Well, we're seeing that beer sales are definitely, definitely up. And then there's the narrator of a commercial for First Leaf, a subscription wine club, echoing the sentiment, we're going to need a lot of wine to get through this year. No, you will not need a lot of wine to get through this year. Because just as a reminder for people who may not know that alcohol just happens to be a depressant. And those commercials are actually just part of an onslaught of ads promising relief in a stressful time. But there are many, many more promising reliefs that you can indulge in rather than drinking more beer and having more wine. Because there is a reality here, too, that the U.S. Census Bureau recently reported that a third of Americans now are showing signs of clinical depression and anxiety. And these and other mental conditions are becoming amplified and not to be surprised during the recent pandemic. Well, COVID-19 patients and their families are also at high risk to develop depression and anxiety. But what's really, really interesting is that in March 2019, Mass General providers saw a 5% of patients through telepsychiatry, either over video or phone calls. So guess what's happened since March 2020? We now see 97% of patients virtually. And in my practice, I see 100% of my patients virtually. I haven't seen anybody face-to-face since March. And frankly, I really miss seeing people. I miss saying hello. I miss giving them a hug. It is definitely, definitely a changing world. And people are wondering, you know, how is all of this online therapy working? Of course, you want to be really, really sure that you are not just finding someone online who promises to be a coach or a counselor, but that you're still doing your homework and making sure that you are finding a therapist who has the credentials and who is well qualified and who hopefully you are going to be able to connect with and be able to begin to acknowledge, address, and resolve one's problems. But there was another piece in the New York Times, and this was just at the beginning of September. The psychiatrist will see you online now. And there have been predictions over the years that psychotherapy was supposed to go virtual and may be proved right by the pandemic. Not as maybe proved right, has definitely, definitely been proven right. But what's interesting is I always ask my patients, particularly my new patients, you know, how is this working for you? But the studies show that if widely used approaches such as cognitive behavioral therapy lose something crucial by being virtual, it is not evident from the studies done so far. So that's good news. In one study, for instance, a team led by researchers based at the Baltimore Veterans Affairs Medical Center, they tracked more than 100 veterans being treated for depression over 6 months, half of them engaging in traditional in-person therapy, and the other half receiving care online. Now, both groups improved on standard measures by the same amount. And then there was another study led by a Leslie Moreland of the Department of Veteran Affairs Pacific Islands Healthcare System. And he compared in-person and virtual talk therapy for 120 veterans with post-traumatic stress, PTSD, and it reached a similar finding that improvement across the board, no difference between the groups. So the evidence so far from these trials comparing face-to-face versus over video, every trial that this author has seen shows no difference, not even a little bit of difference, but no difference in clinical outcomes between face-to-face and virtual online teletherapy. I frankly am really, really surprised, but if it works, then it works. And if patients are satisfied and they are getting their needs met and their problems resolved, then so be it. And in summary, about 90% of patients, and in my practice, 100% of patients report being satisfied with the experience. So who would have thought a number of years ago that we would be doing psychotherapy online? I think that there are a lot of things several years ago that we never, ever, ever could have possibly imagined. I mean, here I am in our apartment in New York City. I'm doing my show, of course, live in front of a microphone. I have not been at the Progressive Radio Network studio since March. I miss the producers. I miss the ambiance. And yet my audience seems to be perfectly satisfied with the fact, and people may not even know until I just told you right now, that I am at home and doing the show, because I made a decision that I did not want to take the subways, and that I'm trying to be very, very prudent when it comes to taking care of myself and keeping safe for myself and for my husband in the midst of the pandemic. And the fact is that we are still in the midst of a pandemic. Well, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. And I had a couple of things happen to me that I wanted to share with you. Last year, and I think that I made the decision today that I am not going to be politically correct. In fact, people who know me that I always tell it the way it really is, or at least the way I really see it. Last year, I decided that I wanted to do some volunteer work at the Retreat, which is a very, very well-known domestic violence organization in East Hampton, where we also happen to have a house. And it was to really volunteer a particular expertise that I would bring to the retreat based on my research, based on my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And I developed a program called Stop Domestic Violence Before It Starts, Never Make a Mistake in Love Again. And I thought this would be a really nice thing to do for free, to take some time and educate, whether or not it would be the staff or some of the people who were actually living at the retreat, on the three things that I discovered over the years, over 35 years plus, that people, particularly women, need to do to never make a mistake in love again. Well, my experience was really interesting. I was told to contact one person, and then I was told to contact another staff person. And the response, to say the least, was a little strange. The staff person thanked me very much for calling. She said that the clients were receiving all of the help that they needed, and that if there was ever a time that they wanted my expertise, that they would be in touch. Well, the fact was that I never heard from them again. And there is a reality out there that we really do have to acknowledge, is that the domestic violence rates continue to soar. In fact, 4 women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. Homicide by intimate partner has increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017. And if we know about the divorce rate, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%, 67% of second marriages end in divorce, and 74% of third marriages end before a judge. So I found it a little strange, given the podcasts and the books and all of the talk that we hear about domestic violence, that a domestic violence organization would not be interested in having an expert, a nationally recognized psychotherapist and sex therapist, volunteer her services, perhaps to get a second opinion. So I found that strange. And then days ago, something else happened that I found particularly strange, that I had volunteered my services to work with some veterans. In fact, I had made a decision about a year ago that I would be really happy to treat a male or a female veteran free of charge for as long as they needed, until they were feeling better and until their symptoms were really under control. I mean, we're talking about traumatic stress disorder. We're talking about substance abuse, which obviously affects people's psyches. It affects their families. It affects their marriages. And I got a really, really response. And luckily, I have a really strong ego, and I did not take this personally. But apparently, there was some red tape that was involved in who the providers were going to be and how the providers were going to be chosen. So the response was, you know, thank you very much, but no thank you. So I was sitting this morning in my living room with my husband, Jim, and I was just kind of posing the question. I was talking to myself out loud, how can this possibly be? So what I decided to do, since my husband Jim Bredos is a sociologist and he is the host of a really fabulous show, The Radical Imagination, on MNN television, I thought that he would be the perfect person to talk to about what is really happening in the nonprofit world of philanthropy, benefits, and volunteerism. I needed a second opinion about what it was that's really going on. Well, welcome, honey. Thank you for coming into my office from another room in our apartment.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Yeah, I know we discussed this earlier today, and I agree with you. You shouldn't take it personally. Look, it's sociologically, these are organizations that have certain agendas. And in many cases, the philanthropic world is about collecting money, presumably for the cause that they are seeking to help or better or whatever. And many well-meaning people go into these ventures with that in mind. We're not necessarily questioning the motives of many, many of these people. But we don't know these people individually, all of them certainly. But what happens is, as you look at this more organizationally and sociologically, organizations have a need usually to continue and perpetuate themselves. So when you are leading or attempting to lead a cause or gain money to that would benefit the particular people or cause you're trying to help or represent, as the monies come in, as you seek to get more and more people behind it, the organization increases. There are people who come on board who have certain agendas attached to what is what the cause should be. And you or I or anybody else may not now fit into that agenda. So the monies also get to be spent in many of these cases philosophically on the organization itself. Now, this is cuts across Democrats, Republicans, liberals, progressives, radicals, and so on. So the people really who are benefiting from this oftentimes financially are the people who are setting these benefits and programs up. And, they have a stake in maintaining it and keeping power, and they relish that power and often try to keep certain other people away from it, from that power that they seek to wield. And if you don't fit into their agenda, well, that's the way it goes.
But of course, you know, at least theoretically, raison d'être for all of these nonprofit organizations is to help the people,
sure,
the people who are suffering from depression, anxiety, PTSD, women who are in battered shelters. I mean, that is, at least in theory, what these organizations, that's why they're there.
Well, so they say they're there and they want to believe that. And oftentimes, look, you can't say this, we're not making a blanket statement about all organizations here, groups and so on, but when it comes down to it, people who often start these organizations and agencies and benefits want to make sure that they become and maintain their leadership in it. And so their benefit becomes a psychological one. They feel that they're doing good, that they're aiding the people, when in fact, they may not be actually reaching them or really representing them. So we talk about grassroots indigenous movements. For example, like Black Lives Matter, for example. I've had a number of people on my show that represent more of these grassroots indigenous efforts. You've had Judy on yourself, you're Judy Human from
Crip Camp.
Right. And the mantra there for the disability rights movement is, without us, you're not going to have a movement, right? It's not about telling us what we need. We need to be part of that decision making. And that's a very, very important distinction to be made. How much are you going to include and who are you going to include in the decision making process? Your type of therapy, for example, may not have, gone well with the transcendental meditation people that are running the operation. What's it called? The Warrior Operation benefit out in Southampton, and they got some pretty faces there. Scarlett Johansson, we admire enormously as an actress. Susan Ritchie, and so on. But again, it's more than the pretty faces. It's more than the celebrities. If you're really talking about trying to end war and the militarization of the police, well, let's have a serious discussion about it. Let's bring Black Lives Matter people into it, not just the politicians or police chiefs who you are also having there. So it becomes, it gets a little sticky. And I think that, again, these philanthropies who set up these benefits and the volunteers they then ask to participate, often have an agenda that we don't see at first glance.
Well, you can go to pretty parties and you can have, of course,
sure,
these days,
not?
Everything is basically, online. But, when I think back and I was, talking to you about this morning, I was the executive director of a Canadian Jewish Family Service Agency. And we loved our volunteers. We needed our volunteers. Absolutely. We trained our volunteers. Absolutely. We certified our Absolutely. Volunteers. I mean, volunteers are what makes up organizations. And I have a patient currently who's been with the Make-A-Wish Foundation for many, many, many years. And that is a really hands-on, wonderful, wonderful organization. She goes to the people's houses, and of course the kids, many of the kids are dying. They have very, very little time left, and these wishes happen, and the people who have the money and the people who really care about these kids, they make these wishes happen almost immediately. And I was talking to her recently, you know, because of the travel restrictions, etc., so things, you know, have changed a little bit. But one really does need to wonder, because I'm sure if I spoke to a woman in a shelter, in a shelter, not just in East Hampton, but in a shelter anywhere in this country, and I said to them, I have research, I have experience, I have a book, I have a formula that will teach you moving forward how to never make a mistake in love again. I cannot imagine that someone would say, well, listen, we need to go through some red tape, which may take months or years or may never happen at all, before we would be able to be interested as clients in your work. So I was really, really taken aback. This had nothing to do with my ego. I have a very good, strong professional and personal ego. And it was just very puzzling for
me. It's really stupid. It's just stupid. There are so many, for example, these veterans. We have well over 7,000 have been killed in these various wars here the last few years, in Afghanistan and Pakistan and so on, Iraq, of our own troops. I mean, and that's the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands who have been disabled and mentally traumatized and so on. There is so much need for that, for the sort of help that you're offering, and absolutely, you could help so many, and it is puzzling. Well, what's going on here?
What's going on is really the question. And I'm sure that I have lost a number of colleagues and friends through this kind of a discussion, but people who know me know that I don't stand behind political correctness, and that my query is legitimate, and I would be so interested in hearing from members of my audience, how do you go about volunteering expert services and you are told that red tape prevents you from helping the people who really need the services? I don't get it.
The technicality was, or we won't get into detail, but there was evidently certain people and certain organizations in particular that you had that was working with this particular benefit that had to be had to okay anybody coming in. Now that's ridiculous. And it happens to be the NYPD. So you have to go through them to find out who can qualify. I mean, I ran, as you know, I ran an organization at the University of Colorado as an undergraduate. I had dozens and dozens of volunteer students. That was the organization, the clearinghouse. We had students come in to various social agencies around the campus there and around Boulder. We made sure, as you were saying before, they were trained. They had the capacity to help. And you welcome that. That's what you want. You don't want one particular group that is now controlling who gets to define who gets to help.
And what kind of therapy they're going to get.
What do they know about it?
Yeah.
And well, so it gets to be ugly in a sense. It is political in a sense.
Well, it's obviously, you know, completely, completely political.
But at least let's be honest about that. These groups, and it's not, we're not just picking on a few, one or two or three. At least be transparent. All these organizations, and particularly the philanthropic groups, whether they're church-related, synagogue-related, mosque-related, what's really behind their programs? What are they attempting to achieve? Who are they attempting to influence? and so on. And I'm not, we're not, you know, one of us are saying that these are mean, necessarily mean, vicious, malicious people, but let's be at least transparent about what's going on.
Well, and you know, the other thing, right? You know, about, yes, yep. And the other thing about being transparent, which is something, of course, that I talk about every single week. I mean, one would hope, Jim, mm-hmm. that with all the programs and counseling and therapy and money that is being spent in the areas of domestic violence and marriage and relationships, and there are more and more podcasts that are coming out every single day, that we would see some positive change in terms of what is happening in the area of domestic violence. And yet all we are seeing is that the numbers are increasing. The numbers are increasing in the areas of depression. The areas are increasing in the areas of anxiety disorders. So I think at some mm-hmm. point in the mental health field, we really need to take an honest look about what is it that we are doing. What is effective? How are we spending our time? Who is really getting the benefit from all of the counseling and therapy and podcasts and shows and lectures on relationships and sexuality and domestic violence? And this is something that very few people I know of have been willing to really talk about.
Right. It's kept under the rug. And I mean, sociologists, at least some from more of a critical bent, do try to point out how oftentimes programs, policies that are set up have opposite effects. And sometimes they may, in fact, have the real purpose of maintaining control in some different form. So when you have a drug war that goes after primarily lower class people of color, and you have a mass incarceration movement, in fact, there are those in the political arena who have a stake in perpetuating that sort of policy and that sort of analysis, rather than face the real reasons, the real, you know, big pharma and the drug addiction that occurs there. I mean, we have much, much, much more so-called legal addiction than we do in the so-called inner city communities and so on. So there's a lot of things we need to unwrap in a sense and look beneath the surface, as you're doing on your show here and as we're trying to explore. We're not trying to diss people here. We're not, you know, we're trying to uncover
some truths.
Yeah, to get to some truths that aren't often that apparent, and we need to get smarter about all this stuff.
No, it's true. And yet with all of this, and the statistics really bear this out, is that people talk a lot about the lack of access to mental health services. And, you know, I wonder, it couldn't just be me. I wonder how many other people with good hearts, with all the credentials, have offered to volunteer their clinical services, and for something like red tape that we were turned away. And it doesn't hurt me. I mean, I feel badly, but I have a busy practice. I have a busy life. I don't need to do this. This was a gift that I chose to give. And my gift was rebuked, and my gift will never be offered again. I mean, that's the impact that it would have on people like me who are offering something genuine, offering some real expertise, and are told that red tape prevents you from being a part of this organization.
Well, there's always this, you know, you complain about, well, it's money, and do we spend money for these programs? And those who actually tend to not want government and you know, public forces to come in and fund these programs that a lot of people need and want, they on the other hand, say, okay, yeah, the churches can do it, the synagogues can do it, the volunteers can do it, the private sector can do it, and yet they don't allow those elements to come in. They can't be done. So you know, they don't bring in the same people that you're talking about here. So you don't have it, you can't have it both ways. In other words, if you're not going to have the public sector and develop the sort of programs and have the resources that you're talking about that are so desperately needed, then what are you going to resort to? You're going to resort to these benefits, these celebrities coming in, making a name for themselves and people, you know, perpetuating their organizations. And not really getting to the root of the problem and cutting out people like yourself. You're not the only one.
Well, I mean, yes, that's true. I mean, I don't feel cut out. I feel that there was someone, a man or a woman, who could have benefited from my expertise that was cut out. And then I actually was thinking about, you know, as we're talking about domestic violence, we're talking about this particular veterans organization, but let's talk also about David Rothenberg and what happened a couple of years ago. Now, for people who don't know, you can just kind of fill them in his organization.
The Fortune Society has a long history of trying to help ex-offenders, and they have grown enormously, and they have very, very also fancy benefits, and asking people to donate thousands and thousands.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, that's right. It's gone up in the years. And he's created a little bit of more than just a little bit of an empire up there. And there's new apartments, houses up down by the, on 140th Street there in Riverside, along with the Fortune Society offices and so on. So again, here's a private group seeking public and private monies to do good. And they do a relatively good job with the enormous number of inmates and convicts that are now part of our pool of people that need their help. But again, it becomes give to the Fortune Society, and again, nothing wrong with that to a certain extent, but let's put the resources at a public level. We need dozens and dozens and dozens of these sorts of well-run, well-maintained organizations and facilities that would really get to the great numbers of people that need the help. And we're not doing that.
Well, and if you recall, and I tell you that if I did not have a really good sense of self, personal self, professional sense, if you recall, I actually wanted to volunteer at the Fortune Society to run groups. And again, for some reason, here we have hundreds of people who have just come out of prison, who need all kinds of support, financial support, mental health support, substance abuse counseling. And yet?
And you weren't the only one. There were other people that they could not find spots for yet, for whatever reason.
It makes no sense.
It does make no sense.
No.
And other than they want to maintain a certain power, control over who gets to do these things. And they do hire, many of the people that they do have doing this are the ex-inmates themselves. So it's a cottage industry. The Fortune Society provides jobs for those who've come out of prison and who then for the rest of their lives pretty much don't do anything else but make Fortune Society sort of their business. They become part of this growing business. So that's what I was saying before, when first beginning this, that organizations have a basic need to persist and perpetuate themselves, to grow and expand. And that's what Rothenberg is doing. And that's what most of these private places are trying to do. It's about them. It's about them, their name, their brand. Now, they, in the name of doing good, but many of these people never, ever, and I've written articles on this, never, ever liberate themselves from what is known as the re-entry industry. It's an industry. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. a business.
It's a business.
It's a business.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes we refer to use, well, this is a mixed audience here, right? It's poverty pimps. Sometimes we refer to these people as pimps who use their businesses and their expertise to push their own self-interest.
And to keep the people down.
Well, you know.
Consciously not, or unconsciously.
I don't know. I don't know, but keeping them funneled and structured into their apparatus.
Well, I think that this is a most interesting, interesting kind of a discussion.
All right.
And
all you people out there, just be careful and then take care, be strong, and you got a great show, BD, and I'll take off.
Okay. It? Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for your input.
Thank
your
you.
Expertise and your sociological analysis and your radical imagination. Okay. That's right. And I am, you know, I'm very, very curious, people listening to the show, what they would have to say about this particular segment. Because the fact is that in this country right now, and the numbers are soaring, 16 million adults in the United States. It was 1 in 5 Americans. Research is now telling us it is 1 in 3 Americans who are suffering from clinical depression, 40 million adults suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders. And the reality, my friends, is that we all need all we can possibly get. And, you know, every week I want you to think about your own essential mental health checkup. Because you think about it, every year, typically, we schedule appointments with our doctors and our dentists to make sure that our body and teeth are strong and healthy. Doesn't your mental health merit the same kind of attention? Well, of course it does. And although an annual psychological checkup may not be feasible for everyone in the current healthcare system, individuals should still feel empowered to explore their mental well. And I am going to give you right now. It's not an official, diagnostic tool, and in no way substitutes for a professional assessment. But these are some of the things that I really do want you to think about. The first question, how are you really doing? And for each of these items, ask yourself if the statements describe your life or if they don't. And if your answers to half or more are negative, it may aim to mental health provider. Number one is mood. I have days when I feel down, but over the past year, I haven't experienced a period of depressed mood that lasted longer than 2 weeks or negatively affected my work or relationships. So that's enough going on in my life to keep me absorbed, and I have interests or hobbies I engage in regularly. And of course, remember, we all go through ups and downs in our lives, but it is only when, if we're talking about clinical depression, that it becomes overwhelming and that it gets in the way of our life in our relationships that we really do need to reach out and ask for some serious mental health help. And I just want to go through what is depression, clinical depression, depressed mood most of the day, nearly every day. Now remember, we all have ups and downs, but if we are having depressed mood every day, nearly every day, that is a problem and it is time to reach out and ask for help. Number two, markedly diminished interest or pleasure in all or almost all activities. Again, it's most of the day, nearly every day. Number three, significant weight loss when not dieting or weight gain. Number four, insomnia or hypersomnia nearly every day. Number five, fatigue or loss of energy nearly every day. And of course, if you're finding that you're not sleeping or you're sleeping too much or you have a loss of energy or fatigue, you really do also need to check things out physically. There may be something else going on than just clinical depression. Number six, feelings of worthlessness or excessive or inappropriate guilt. And again, we all go through this from time to time, but when it starts to take over your life, that is the time to reach out. Number seven, diminished ability to think or concentrate. Number eight, recurrent thoughts of death, recurrent suicidal ideation, or having a plan. And if we're talking about suicide, suicide attempts by young people quadrupled over the past 6 years. And since 2011, there has been a 40% increase nationally by self-poisoning by young people. And if you want to hear a really depressing suicide statistics, the rate for children ages 10 to 24, the suicide rate for children ages 10 to 24 increased by 56%. So if you are experiencing these kinds of mood issues and you have checked things out with your MD physical doctor, it's really important that you do something with the depression. I mean, depression, it not only affects us emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically and physically and our work and our children and our relationships and our sense of well-being, but, you know, sometimes just some short-term therapy can really, really make a difference. And of course, if you have a lot of what I called old issues and skeletons in the closet, things that have never really been sorted through, your abuse, your relationships, your horrible relationships, perhaps with your family of origin, these are things, it's really strange how they happen to just when you think that things are going well, they happen to appear and reappear in your life. And even though we are unable to change our history, what I have found as a psychotherapist is that there is a very, very effective way with help to emotionally work through what did and did not happen in our earlier lives. Because if we don't, if we're constantly fighting and we're constantly having to deal with all of this unfinished business and the skeletons in our closet, it makes it very, very difficult to really live in the moment. In fact, what happens is that we typically end up having 1 foot in the past and 1 foot in the present. And this is also a reminder for people who are seeking therapy. I mean, it's one thing to just deal with today, okay? And what is going on in your life today? But yesterday, and the unfinished business of yesterday will always affect today. And that is why I have found is that when I begin therapy with people, I begin at the beginning. I want to know about their families. I want to know what happened. I want to know what didn't happen. I want to know the impact of what did and did not happen on these people's lives, on their relationships. So with me, it becomes a very, very intensive kind of a therapeutic experience. But, you know, you're trying to help people really sort through the barriers that are keeping them from living happy and joyful lives. So if you're looking at your own mental health check and assessment, again, you're looking at your mood, You want to look at your relationships. How are they going? Your personal relationships, your professional relationships. What about substance abuse? You know, I saw a couple for the first time last week, and he admitted, and it was a good thing that he was able to be honest with me that it was not an issue for him. Anytime he was feeling a little down, to just sit down and drink a whole bottle of wine. And somehow he had been able to rationalize that that was not a problem. And that was one of the first things he said to me: I am not an alcoholic. And here he is guzzling down bottles and bottles of wine every week. And for me, it wasn't about pointing fingers. It was about, what was that all about? Particularly since alcohol happens to be a depressant. And at the end of the conversation, you know, he was able to acknowledge that he has been very, very, very depressed for most of his life. So we are going to be dealing with his depression and his need for alcohol as a quick fix way to somehow alleviate the depression on any given day, which, by the way, does not work. And you're looking at mood, and you're looking at temper, and you're looking at physical health, and you're looking at sleep and self-care and purpose. You have a reason every single day to wake up in the morning. And if you don't, that's something that needs a little bit of exploration. I think that we all need purposes to feel that there's something every day for us to either contribute, to give, and to wake up for our goals. So I think that having regular self mental health checks happens to be a good thing. And of course, if you're listening to the Ask Beanie Show every single week live from Mondays, every Monday from 3 to 4, I invariably am asking you to take a look at all of these things. Well, here I am in front of my computer, talking into my microphone that is in my office here on the Upper West Side, and I can't believe that the time has actually come and gone here on the Ask Beanie Show. And I really appreciate your listening, your comments, your texting, your emails. And I hope every single week that there's some little thing that I have said that will help you improve the quality of your life and the quality of your relationships. And of course, I end the show with my favorite song, which is, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. And